Good morning. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And we are here.
Yes.
Day four of Oshkosh 2019.
It's Thursday morning, 4.5 hours of sleep. But what a night last night. Wow.
It was a good night. They had tried to blow up the entire runway.
I thought we had a nuclear weapon there at the end of the fireworks. It was cool.
Joining us is Mr. Troy Asher of NASA and the SOFIA project, which that's got to be one of the best acronyms I've heard yet.
SOFIA.
It certainly
is. Sounds great.
You can certainly remember it. That's
good
for
morning.
Sure.
That's
good
morning,
right.
Guys.
Good morning.
It's nice to meet you.
So somebody came up with
the
idea.
You guys got 4 hours of sleep. That sounds pretty good to me right now.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you were up a lot later, huh?
A little.
Debating matters of technical
sure.
Nature, I'm sure.
We'll probably. Say that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Let's go with that.
Okay, so SOFIA project, you're putting an infrared telescope in an aircraft.
Yeah, it's, SOFIA in and of itself is an acronym, and anybody that's been around NASA knows that we have a PhD in acronyms.
And we're really I've
good
noted
at it,
that.
Right?
The department is very big.
Yeah, so we often get spelled SOFIA like the S-O-P-H kind of SOFIA, but that's not it at all. It's SOFIA, so it's a strat, and each letter actually makes a big deal, right? So Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. So
you know, I bet when you say that at parties, people just walk away.
They love it. I do it all the time. I use it.
But, I was going to say, they either walk away or they fall asleep.
Yeah.
Your choice.
Yeah. So
your job as, are you a pilot, one of the pilots?
Yes, I was a test pilot in the Air Force and got brought over to NASA. I had some large aircraft background, so they brought me over for the flight test of this airplane as we were developing the door. Because that's kind of a big deal, opening a big old hole in an airplane at 45,000 feet. You know?
Right. Now, that compartment is non-pressurized.
Correct.
And non-heated and non-anything.
Non-anything, yes, open to space.
So all those scientists are in a different spot, part of the aircraft with controls.
Yeah. It was a cool mod they did to the airplane. Back about two-thirds of the way back to the tail, they just cut the empennage, just cut the tail off completely, and of a 747. So it's not a small job. And then they put a 30-inch pressure bulkhead right there and then remated the two pieces back together. So in a 747, that aft cargo bay, and there's two exits that all got wiped out, and it's a place for a 20 metric ton telescope.
What, it weighs that much?
Yeah, 44,000 pounds or something like
that.
Oh,
my goodness. That wasn't in the paperwork. But anyway.
No.
It's heavy.
Your main job is to fly straight and level.
Absolutely. That's really hard, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
That's the most demanding flying you've ever done, right?
wait a minute now.
Yeah, the mental toughness to stay awake, you know. That's right.
You guys have an autopilot on that. Is the hardest part of that job just, autopilot on?
Yeah. Not necessarily, but yeah, sort of. The autopilot is key to the whole thing, though. You can't really do the mission without it.
Right. I mean, one little bump, one little wobble, and that telescope, since it's looking such a far distance, just completely loses the target.
Yeah. Actually, day-to-day operations in it, from a pilot standpoint, it's not that exciting. I mean, you're not going upside down or anything like that.
Right.
But it's on the backside of the clock, so that's one thing. You never take off. Earliest you ever take off is a half hour before sunset, because you can only do this stuff at night. So.
Right.
You can't even open the door until the sun's below the horizon. So, and then however long the night is, you know, and then however long the legs of a 7-4. So we usually fly a 10-hour flight.
That was the next question, and 10 hours and three bathroom stops.
Yeah, we got a bathroom on the upper deck. So
I hope so.
Yeah. Why, you know, I'm looking at the aircraft here. Why a 747 SP?
Yeah, that's a common question. So, you know, without going into too much depth, you know, the original airborne astronomy started out in a Learjet, and it just had a camera, telescope looking out the window, and that was the first one. It flew for a while, and then they decided, hey, we want a bigger one, so they modified a C-141 Kuiper, and that had I think the mirror on that for the telescope was just about a meter or a little bit less, and that flew for 25 or 30 years, and then they decided, we just need bigger. We need, how big?
Those scientists, yes.
Yeah, how big can we go? Because size is important with a mirror, right? So how big of a mirror can you put in an airplane? And that was really the question. And so they were looking at the largest airplanes that you could find, and they figured they could get about a 3-meter mirror, which is pretty big.
20 tons, though. I had no idea it'd be that heavy.
So they looked for that, and we looked around, and obviously the 747 was a player, right, because it's a big airplane. And there's a couple other ones, but then there's a whole lot of design, right, cost and performance and availability and all of those things. And SP was there, and it worked, and it fit. So it's a 2.5 meter mirror in the back of that thing.
And, well, and you got it for the right price.
You see, yeah, that's absolutely the thing. You just covered it. You said there's all kinds of 747s out there. The SP is, well, ASP stands for special performance, right, although most people called it stubby plane.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a tiny, it's the
looks
tiniest.
Like a hot rod. Yeah.
It does
yeah.
look like a hot
yeah,
rod.
Yeah, I always thought it looked like a little hot rod. But, you know, the history, I don't know if a lot of people know the history on it, but, you know, they were just looking for that niche to go from, like, San Francisco to Tokyo or to Sydney type of thing, right? So a long range, cross the water, and fast. So the airplane was, at the time, you had the classics, right? And they couldn't go very high, and the engine performance wasn't that great, and they're heavy. So they shorten it up, they lighten it up a little bit, and they go out to 0.92 Mach. And we can one hop now. We can go to Sydney, we can go to Tokyo, we can do things like that for about, you know, unfortunately, history says that just right after they fielded those things, up about 44 of them, then the 747-400 came out and completely obsoleted everything because of the engine technology.
Well, so you could be hired by an airline right now to go fly 747s.
I guess. Yeah, I suppose.
But this is much more fun.
That's for sure.
Do you, I'm going to ask you a question you probably don't know about, but is each flight one target to observe?
No. We have a science team usually, and the science teams are looking at a specific objective, but occasionally there's two or three different objectives on a single flight.
Okay.
So dwell time is important. If you have a ground-based telescope, you know you're going to point at a star, especially one that's literally hundreds of light years away, and there's not a lot of those little photons coming in, right? Not a lot of light coming in. So they got to sit there and look at it for a stare at it for a long time. Well, obviously, in an airplane, we're flying along at, 0.9 Mach. And so there's a lot of straight legs staring.
Right.
But then you got to turn sometime. Yeah. So we look at something else.
Well, so where do you do these flights? Do you stay over the continental U.S. while you're doing it?
Yeah, the interesting thing about a 7-4 is you can go a lot of places with it. But typically what we do is we operate out of Palmdale, California. And we've got long legs. So a typical flight on the state side is, we'll take off out of Palmdale, California, Los Angeles, and we'll go north to Seattle, hang a right, and then fly over to Oshkosh and then hang a right and go down to Atlanta and then around Dallas back to Palmdale again. So the whole United States, that's over the continent. We'll also go north all the way up to Canada, the northern border of Canada, and back sometimes. We'll go out over the Pacific all the way out to Hawaii and do a couple laps and come back.
A lot of frequent flyer miles there.
Yeah.
altitude that you normally operate at is?
We like to get as high as we can. That's the S in SOFIA stratospheric.
Right.
So because it's and the I is infrared, astronomy requires dry air. So any kind of moisture in the air attenuates the signal. So we try to get as dry as we can. On the surface, you go to Mauna Kea over in Hawaii. It's real high, 13,000 feet. They got an infrared telescope up there. So if you can get that one higher, it's better and you get less water. So up above 36,000 feet, 99% of the water vapor is dissipated. So we always get above that. And the higher you get, the little bit better it gets. So we start at about 37 when we're heavy. And then we get to 43 as quickly as we can. It takes us probably 3 or 4 hours, and we get 4 hours or so at 43.
Okay. How long does it take the telescope to chill down to that temperature?
About a half hour.
That's
so
fast.
First thing you always do is you climb to the first altitude. It's usually 37,000 feet based on our fuel load. And as soon as you level off, first thing you do is open the door and just let it start cooling. And I say 30 minutes. It's about 20, and you can see it, see through it, and everything. You get data, but it's not great until
it's
cooled down
because you're giving off background radiation off the telescope itself.
And in the stratosphere, the temperatures are always about minus 56 Celsius. Sometimes colder, but that's the starting.
Yeah, that's like Minnesota in February.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Oh, you're getting close, right? Getting close to Minnesota.
Oh yeah.
Now you're talking about this door. What exactly kind of door is this? I just can't visualize.
To Lowe's. They got one of those little bifolds
for
the bathroom.
Bifold door.
You're not
up
too far off. It's about the size of a commercial garage door, like a semi truck type or a big RV door. 10-footer.
Well, and it can't hang out in the airstream. So what is roll up or something?
Yep,
shutter.
It just rolls over. It's a piece, and it's got a flexible lower door, and then the upper door is rigid. So there's two doors that kind of meet in the middle, and they create an aperture that moves back and forth. So the outer door just rolls down when you're on the ground or when you want it to be fully closed, and then as it opens up, there's a lower door that kind of follows it that creates an aperture. But yeah, it's that right there probably is an engineering marvel, and that's where I came in, was testing that.
Okay. Talk about positioning the telescope. Okay, I'm probably going to get this wrong. The azimuth is the elevation. That's probably controlled on the mount of the scope. But do they actually rotate the aircraft, change heading?
Yeah.
To steer it precisely?
Exactly. So in an airplane, just think about it like a regular telescope. Your elevation, obviously bank angle would control elevation, but we don't want to do that. And it moves. It goes from like 20 to 70 degrees. And it is computer controlled. It locks onto the stars. It has some trackers, you know, and it'll do its own elevation.
All right.
But azimuth is heading, like you said. So a night fly in Sophia, once you're leveled off and going, is level off, engage the autopilot. They say fly, 300 true heading. And then in 3 minutes from now, they say turn 1 degree left. And you have to do that with less than 5 degrees of bank. So we manipulate the autopilot such that we get like 2 degrees of bank. And then 5 minutes later, give me one left. And all night it's one left. One left, one left, one left, one left. And the leg is like an hour long and 500 miles or something. And yeah, so it's not that exciting on the actual, for a pilot. Yeah.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us real quick. That was Troy Asher from NASA. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And this is EAA Radio.